If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Joining the push for more conversation about so-called stand your ground laws.
Those laws in effect in dozens of states, including ours.
Let's talk about that night outside the Arizona restaurant in 2014.
My wife and I were out with some other retired friends. Then I was viciously attacked by two twice, one of them wielding a knife. My last words to him before discharge, I said, "This is going to suck for both of us." When the police showed up without any investigation or due process, they're the ones that arrested me and charged me with attempted murder and two counts of aggravated assault.
You served two decades in the military. How did that shape your view of justice?
You are now presumed guilty until proven innocent.
Let's go back to your book for a second. What do you hope that readers take away from your story?
Let's start waking America up to what's going on in the United States.
What happens when you do exactly what the law says you're allowed to do? Defend yourself. And the system turns on you anyway. Today's guest is Barry Todd, a decorated Army veteran, a successful businessman, and the author of Stand Your Ground, One Man's Self-Defense Nightmare. In 2014, Barry was attacked outside a restaurant. He defended himself just like he had been trained to do his entire life. But instead of being treated like a victim or even a survivor, he was arrested, charged with attempted murder, and thrown into a justice system that seemed more interested in making an example of him rather than uncovering the truth. This is a story about power. It's a story about what happens when public perception and prosecutorial pressure collide, and you find yourself fighting for your life all over again, this time in a courtroom. Barry's case forces us to ask hard questions about how stand your ground laws are actually applied. Why do some people walk free while others get locked away for doing the exact same thing? Why is the burden of proof so often placed on the person just trying to survive? In this episode, Barry opens about his military background, the night that changed everything, and what it felt like to be labeled a criminal by the very system he once served. But more than that, he tells us how he fought back with his voice, his story, and his truth. Because sometimes being misunderstood isn't just painful, it's life-threatening. And today, we're setting the record straight. Enjoy my conversation with Barry Todd.
Thank you.
Barry, thank you so much for joining me today on Misunderstood. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, where are you? I love your hat.
I live in Yuma, Arizona.
Oh, wow. Okay. Amazing. So, all right. Well, all the way from Arizona, I really appreciate it. I'm in Palm Beach today, and I'm really thrilled to have you on the show. I was saying before we started, I got the bio, you know, your bio, and obviously saw the book that you have that's recently come out. And I'm just really excited for people to hear about you and your story and get your book. So I want to get right into it. Before we came on here, I told a little people a little bit about who you are and what your story is, but I want to hear from you. So before 2014, who was Barry Todd? Can you give us a little bit about, you know, your life and who you were up until this moment where your life changed?
Well, I'm a retired 21-year Army Ranger, and it was a blessing serving my country. I've been married for 40 years this
wow.
summer, and I have, together we have 3 children and 4 grandchildren, and we are, actually it's pretty exciting stuff. I just found out, that I had a child back in 1983 before I ever met my wife, and she's actually coming over to visit and meet the whole family. Had no clue. Isn't that a beautiful thing?
Wow. Wait, sidebar. How did you find out about this?
She connected with my cousin on DNA, ancestry DNA.
No way. Like, yes. 23andMe type of thing?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, wait, we could do a whole show on this. So when did that happen?
March of this year.
And she just wrote a note and said, I think I'm related to you guys?
Well, the DNA came up, and then she connected with my cousin, and my cousin called me the first week of March and said, are you sitting down? And I said, why? I said, I'm a retired decorated vet. I've been charged with felonies before. I lived through that. I said, what else could happen?
Right.
And she said to me, she goes, well, I think you have a child from when you were stationed overseas in the early 80s with your Ranger unit. And I said, how do you know this? And she said, well, it's a DNA match. And she started telling me about it. And I said, well, stop. Is her mother's name Heike Anna Marie? Because that's the woman I dated back then. And she goes, yes, it is. I'm like, then it's my child.
So wait, why do you think this woman never told you about this child?
I'm not sure why. I found out later that she put my daughter, she sold her to a foster home in 1983 in Germany. She's a German national.
Oh, I see. Okay. And is she still alive?
The mother, I'm not sure. I know that they connected her and my daughter. But my whole family's ecstatic about it. It's a beautiful thing. This is a God thing.
Oh, my God. That is amazing. Okay. So where does your daughter live now?
Kaiserslautern.
Where's that?
That's in Germany.
Okay. So she's still, okay. Wow. So she's in Germany. And she lived with foster parents or adopted parents her whole life?
It was actually a foster home, because over there they do it a little bit differently. It's like a dorm.
Okay.
And she's been married for 15 years, and I have a grandson who's 13 and a granddaughter who is 10.
Oh my God. So are they going to come to the United States?
They actually land this Friday.
Stop it. All of them, the 3 of them?
And all 3 husband? Of them, I'm bringing them over. I tried to bring, one of Kristoff, my daughter, her name is Jasmine, her husband to come, but he has to work. Okay. But it's been great. They seem to be really loving and just a really, really great family. And we're just so blessed. This is beyond comprehension. So that's the big news that's happening.
That is huge news. Well, that's super exciting. Wait, have you FaceTimed? Like, do you see?
Yeah, we've been.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we've been doing every other week.
Oh my God, I'm so happy for you. So, are they coming and staying with your whole family, or you'll do a bunch of stuff, or whatever?
Yeah, we're going to go to our home in East Tennessee, and I'm going to take them up to meet their grandfather and great grandfather. He turned 90 this year.
Oh my God.
So he's all excited to meet him. And so the whole family's coming in to meet him and everything.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if she's ever reconnected with her real mom and whatever happened to your ex-girlfriend or whatever. I mean, it would be so interesting. Wow, you'll have to come on and tell me that whole story after.
I will. I'll be glad to.
Okay. And well, that's. So,
and then I, going back to my your question,
yeah.
When I retired, I decided to go into the financial services industry. I did about 5.5-6 years with a company called First Command. They focused more on the military. Mm-hmm. And I realized that a lot of companies out there, they're dysfunctional business models. They're just glorified salesmen. So I started my own company in 08. It's a fee-only firm. It's been very successful. And then this thing in 2014 happened that threw my entire life, my family's life, into a whirlwind haze.
Right. So up until that moment, because you served 2 decades in the military, how did that shape your view of justice, discipline, protecting others?
I totally believed our system was the best system in the world, and I still do, but I realize that underneath there's some serious problems that have come up. Mm-hmm. And you are now presumed guilty until proven innocent.
Yeah.
And it's horrible how they lawfare, even though that's the new term, Rachel, it's actually been going on for decades now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy.
Right. So let's talk about that night outside the Arizona restaurant in 2014. Can you talk us through exactly what happened?
Well, in a brief sense, my wife and I were out with some other retired friends. Her and I were threatened. Then I was viciously attacked, not by one person, Rachel, but by two twice, one of them wielding a knife. And the entire thing was on video. It was self-defense. But when the police showed up without any investigation or due process, they're the ones that arrested me and charged me with attempted murder and 2 counts of aggravated assault within 5 hours.
Right. So got it. But tell me, were you guys there for dinner? Were you?
Yes.
Okay. So tell me what was going on that night. You're just having a nice dinner. Did people get drunk? What happened?
All right. So there were 5 couples total. One of them had left just a little bit earlier. We met there for dinner, drinks and dancing. And it was about 10:30. I had told my wife, I said, hey, I'm going to go out to the car and get a fresh can of Copenhagen. This guy that had become very fresh with our women, all of the women in our group earlier in the evening, tried to pick a fight with me. And I said, I'm not fighting you.
Inside the restaurant.
Correct. I said, I'm not fighting you. I said, I'm too damn old to get in a barroom fight. I'm not doing it. Mm-hmm. And I walked away, not once, but twice. Mm-hmm. Well, apparently he didn't like that. And he followed me outside. And then I tried to go back in, and that bully yard stuff that they try to do, put your hands in your pockets and push on the shoulder.
Yeah.
He was doing that to me. I got around him, but then he got hold of my belt loop. He was outweighed me by 100 pounds, picked me up, threw me headfirst into a cinder block wall, 180 degrees, gave me a concussion, broke a rib. And then I said, I'm going back inside. I'm getting my wife and my belongings. The bouncer had come out. That's when he said, and the bouncer wasn't throwing him out in accordance with Arizona law or the security.
Mm-hmm.
And he threatened my wife then. He said, you're not going back in there. That B is mine. And that's when I said, understand, I'm armed. And then he attacked me again, holding a weapon.
Got it. So, and how did he attack you again?
I brandished my firearm in accordance with Arizona law.
Mm-hmm.
And I had it down at my side, and I said, I'm going back in the building. He was blocking the door. And before I could even get my arm down, when I was pointing at him, he attacked me again, going for the gun. And that's when his buddy who pulled a knife attacked me from behind.
Oh, wow. Okay. So how many witnesses were there? Were there people outside?
Yes, there were several witnesses outside. Be specific, 4 or 5. There was 5, but all of them were his friends.
Oh, got it. Okay. There was no security outside. Your wife wasn't outside. There was nobody.
No, none of my friends that were all retired military, special forces guys, or special operators just like me. Everybody was inside.
Got it. Okay. So they both come at you. You fire, and what happens?
Well, they tackled me. Mm-hmm. I was doing everything I could not to fire the weapon, mm-hmm. but then they got me down on the ground. One of them had me in a bear hug. The other one was breaking my arm, trying to get the weapon out of my hand. Mm-hmm. And then the weapon discharged. My last words to him before discharge, I said, "This is going to suck for both of us."
Right.
And that when he fell off, that's when my friends came out. They started helping me. I sat off to the side, and then the police showed up.
Got it. And so what ultimately happened to the two people? So it was two people that were basically on top of you, right? What happened ultimately to those two?
The one was wounded. I've heard that he's wearing a colostomy bag the rest of his life.
Okay.
The other man, nothing. They weren't charged with anything.
Okay. Got it. So at what point did you realize that this was not necessarily just an unfortunate incident, a bar fight, and that this was going to be a much bigger deal?
Once I started talking to the detective.
Okay.
He came in because I wasn't trying to hide anything. I said, okay, this was strictly self-defense. So I told him what happened. He comes back in about 30 minutes later, hands me a sheet, tells me to read it and sign it. I asked him what it was. He said, it's a charge sheet. I said, a charge sheet for what? He goes, attempted murder and two counts of aggravated assault. And I said, I told you it was strictly self-defense. And his exact words to me, and all this is on recording and transcribed, he said, well, we have the whole thing on video. I said, great. Have you looked at the video? His exact words to me, Rachel, not yet. I looked at him. I said, oh, you're a real intelligent life form. The oxygen is just flowing to your brain. So that didn't go over too well with him.
I was going to say that probably didn't work in your favor. But okay.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't make up stupid.
I get it. So did you sign it or did you say not signing it?
No, I refused to sign it.
Okay. And next move, they said, well, we're taking you down to the station or what happened?
Well, no, they already had me in the station. They had me in the interview room. Okay. They were recording the entire thing. They then said, okay, we're taking you down and we're going to go ahead and book you. They booked me. They threw me in jail with no medical for 5 days. I had a concussion, broken rib, broken arm, and contused left shoulder.
So meanwhile, what's going through your mind as you were being arrested?
I'm thinking this is crazy. When I first got in the interview room, the first thing I did when I got in there was I prayed. I prayed for about 2 or 3 minutes, and I was more focused on the young man that had been shot. Because seeing some of the things that I've seen in my military career, you never want to hurt somebody. All right. And you want, you know, the alcohol just got to him and he was extremely intoxicated. And to this day, I don't know why he wanted to take me out, but he did. But
right. Right.
For whatever reason. But that was what I focused on. But as I started to get into it, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This is absurd.
Right.
And so when I was in the cell, I got my Bible and I started reading. I got a Bible from the cart that they carry around and started reading.
Right. And at this point, had you been somebody that was very religious or read the Bible before?
Yes, ma'am. I've been strong in my faith for about, at that point, about 15 years, and this just made me even stronger. I did a lot of wailing at God throughout this turmoil, to say the least.
I'm sure.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team
and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips, like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. Forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
But I mean, I'm curious, was it going through your head like, okay, well, they're eventually going to watch this videotape. This is all going to end by the end of the week. Someone's going to come get me. Were you worried about your wife? Like, what? How are you dealing with this?
Well, that's exactly what it was. Well, first off, I had to get out of jail. Mm-hmm. It was a $500,000 cash-only bond over a weekend. It wasn't even an assurity bond where you pay an insurance company.
Yeah,
they $500,000 cash only. So it took me 2 business days to get that capital out of our investments and stuff and go ahead and post that bond. And then when we got out, I had to get an attorney because the attorney that we knew that got me out of jail, he looked at me, he goes, Barry, this is way above my level. I can't handle this. He goes, these are the attorneys I recommend for you. And he gave me the name at the top of the list was a guy by the name of Michael Kimmer. And he was the number two attorney on the Miranda Rights case in 1969. So he's in his 70s now. Brilliant, brilliant legal mind. Mm-hmm. And he took my case. And he got the video. This is what the sad thing was. They took it to the grand jury. They didn't even use the video.
But how is that even possible? I mean, it just seems so crazy that it wouldn't be used.
Well, this is how crazy it is. My case was sent back to the grand jury, Rachel, not once, not twice, not 3 times, but 4 times. And not one time did that prosecutor follow the judge's orders and present the videos.
Why do you think that was?
Because he had a narrative. He wanted to do it. Have you ever heard the term, Rachel, you can indict a ham sandwich in a grand jury?
No, but it's a great... It is.
The American public is so uninformed about the judicial system underneath. The court saved me, but the system underneath is broken. There is no judge and no defense in a grand jury. Right. The prosecutor is supposed to be a minister of justice and present all the facts and then let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you say that. I've been on a grand jury. So I served in Manhattan on a grand jury for 30 days, which is what you're supposed to do. And first of all, I found it fascinating. I was obsessed. I was that girl in there taking notes, asking all sorts of questions. But I can tell you the other, I forget if it's 23, 21, whatever it is, people in the room, they say it's a jury of your peers. No, it is not. These are people that could care less about what they're listening to. They can't wait for the clock to strike 5. Some of them are in it for the $43 that they get. No one cares. And I cared. And there were so many times where I felt like I was in the movie 12 Angry Men or whatever it was, where people are just raising their hand like, yeah, send him to, you know, let's move on. He's guilty. And I was like, how did you get that from that? You didn't even ask these questions. They didn't supply this. So like, I can understand how people are just listening to the evidence and no one has the IQ or the curiosity to say, well, that doesn't really make sense. Like, let's hear more. So I get it. But what I don't understand is you say it was brought back a couple times. How does that work? Because I thought once the grand jury says you're indicted, that it moves forward. So how did that go backwards?
All right. Great question. The first step, and I didn't know this either until my attorney taught me. This was how brilliant of an attorney he was. He goes, well, the first goal is let's not get it to trial.
Right.
Let's get it kicked out at the grand jury. I go, you can do that. He goes, yes, we're going to file a motion to remand it back because he failed to present exculpatory evidence. So every time we would get the transcripts from the grand jury with the jurors' names redacted, and we would go through it, and he would never present the correct self-defense laws for the state of Arizona, and then he would never present the video evidence.
Right.
And so the judge every time would send it back. It got so bad between him and the judge that the judge actually made a finding of fact from the video, which is never done before a case goes to trial, based on the video that I followed Arizona self-defense law, and then told him, and then he still wouldn't dismiss it. The judge told him to take it back to the grand jury again and present this, and that's when he demanded a preliminary hearing.
Got it. So that's interesting. So the judge obviously saw this evidence, saw that there was a possibility that it was self-defense, or knew it was, but because these are going to trial, he can't actually make that decision to throw it out himself, correct?
Not at that point, correct.
Got it. Got it. Right. Okay.
And see, Arizona's different. It's followed the same rules as 28 other states have done.
Right.
We're no longer an affirmative defense state. We're a justification defense state. What does that mean? California, New York, they're affirmative defense states. The moment you say that it's self-defense in those states, you have to prove it was self-defense.
Okay.
In Arizona, Texas, Florida, several other states, they have justification laws now that when you say it was self-defense, you're saying that you were justified in your actions. Because right. you felt that physical force was going to and physical harm was going to come to you, or physical deadly force.
Right. Go ahead.
So that's how it broke down. And when I said it was self-defense, they ignored the Arizona laws that actually put the burden of proving that it wasn't self-defense back on me instead of on them.
Right. You know, it's so interesting because I feel like Americans as a whole really respect veterans. I mean, I don't know if you see it that way, and I'd love to hear your opinion, but as someone who's not a veteran and always listens to, you know, how people treat veterans in a lot of situations, even down to something as small as getting on the airplane first, people are like, thank you for your service. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would have thought that when you announced, by the way, I'm a veteran and I'm carrying a gun, I've had all this training, like I know what I'm doing, I know the law, that people would have given you a little more respect. Did you find that to be the case?
No, not at all. Not at all. I have in my life, in the way I'm treated when I go out, but definitely not in this case.
Right.
What I found out, and this is going to shock you, is, and I was able to narrow it down to one word, honor. Most of society today thinks honor is integrity, doing the right thing when no one's looking. Honor, though, is doing the right thing no matter the cost. In the military, you're trained to do the right thing no matter the cost.
Mm-hmm.
In police forces, at least in Yuma, and I'm seeing a lot of other places as well, just on the news, like Daniel Penny in New York.
Right. I was going to bring that up. Yeah.
Yeah. They know that they have no case. All right. But instead of doing the right thing, the hard thing, they want to make it, they don't want to put the burden on them that they have to justify their actions, so they ignore it. An example, I knew four of the police officers on this police force that arrested me.
Okay.
I went to all, my lead investigator and my attorney went to them. They came in and watched the video after we had it forensically enhanced by the FBI's lead forensics expert, video forensics expert. And they all said, oh, yeah, you got a great case. You're going to win. But every single one of them said, I can't put my name on that. I can't go against my brothers in blue.
Oh.
Every single one of them. Loyalty to them is higher, from what I've seen, than honor. Now, that's not that way across the board. I know there were several federal officers that stepped up that knew me from my business and were friends that signed on the line and stood in front of the judge.
Right. Right. So in doing some research about you and your case, I didn't know that there was stand your ground laws, or otherwise known as no duty to re- to retreat laws.
Correct.
Can you kind of, for people that are listening, and we've talked about this a little already about self-defense, but can you talk about it? I mean, it essentially allows people to use deadly force to defend yourself. But I mean, you hear about it all the time. Like you said, with the Perry case, you know, people can't like it. It seems really hard to prove. And so, you know, and there are movies made about it. Like if you have an intruder and they're in your house, you're more likely to be seen as using deadly force to protect yourself. The second they step out of the house and you still kill them, you could go to prison for it. So right. there are all these crazy laws. Like what did you come to understand about this now that you had to go through it?
I understand that over the past 50 years or so, our laws have been turned upside down. To understand this, I'm going to go ahead and give you an example of my brother. In 1966, his father woke him up at 2 a.m., said, come out here on the porch and wash this blood off the porch. They lived outside Fayetteville, North Carolina. There was a dead man on the porch. 10 minutes later, a sheriff comes driving up and walks up on the porch and goes, what happens? My brother's father said and pointed to the dead man and said, ask him. He goes, I can't. He's dead. He goes, exactly. So don't try to add anything to what I'm getting ready to tell you. He was coming through that window right there, breaking into my house. I have my wife and 7 kids. I put 2 bullets in his chest. Any questions? It went to the grand jury and there were no charges because he was defending his household. Now today, though, prosecutors are elected and they're elected by the population there. So let's use Daniel Penny, for example. Mm-hmm. All right. Daniel Penny's white. Marine, the guy that he restrained, he didn't kill him. He restrained him because he was on drugs, threatening everybody in the car. Mm-hmm. He restrained him until the cops came. He didn't die until 5-10 minutes later.
Right.
And if the prosecutor had done his job and been a minister of justice, that being Alvin Bragg in this case, mm-hmm. if he had presented all the evidence, all the witnesses that were there in the video from the phones to the grand jury, it would have never gone to trial. But right. he would have been, his constituents would have said, oh, he's soft on crime. You let a white man kill a black man.
Right.
And throw race into it when it has nothing to do with race.
Right.
And so that's why these prosecutors do that. They're elected and they're afraid of their constituents to do the right thing.
Right. I hear you. Okay, so now tell me what happened. So it went back to the grand jury. What was the ultimate outcome of that situation?
After the third grand jury, when it was getting sent back the fourth time, mm-hmm. the prosecutor got so mad, he demanded a preliminary hearing.
Okay.
Now, I love Connecticut and Pennsylvania. For felony charges, that's all they do now. They got rid of grand juries.
Okay.
All right. A preliminary hearing is like a mini trial, Rachel. You have a judge, prosecution presents his case, and the defense is able to present their case, and both are able to cross-examine. So, no jury.
Okay, so just the judge.
Just the judge. He's determining, is there probable cause for the case to go to trial?
Okay, got it.
He scheduled 3 days. The prosecutor was done after 6 hours. He didn't use any of the videos. He brought up the witnesses that were friends of the guys that attacked me. Mm-hmm. And then the lead detective. And my attorney used the video. Every one of them recanted their testimony on the stand. The police detective, my attorney got very frustrated with him throughout the entire thing. He said it wasn't his job to know the law. It was the job of the prosecutor and the judges. Mm. And because he didn't know the new self-defense laws in Arizona that had been out about 5, 10, 15 years. Okay. And at the end of it, we didn't even have to put on a case. The judge dismissed the entire case. He looked right at the prosecutor and goes, you know, probable cause is a low bar to obtain in the United States. And I could argue in court that it's even lower in the state of Arizona, and you haven't even come close.
Wow.
Mr. Todd was justified in his actions, defending himself and his wife. All charges are dismissed.
And that was it. You could walk out of court and you were good
to
go. I could
walk out of court.
And there was no chance that they could try you again somehow.
Well, he did dismiss it 4 months later with prejudice. So they could never come back.
Okay.
Because initially he did it without prejudice. And then we filed a motion to make it with prejudice. But still, this is the rough thing, Rachel. It took me another 5.5 years to clear my record in my business.
Meaning what?
I own a national financial advisory firm. We're registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. The moment you're charged with a felony, you have to disclose it to every single client, new client within your firm that's doing any business with you. And to get that off, it has to be expunged or sealed. And then you got all the regulators with all the states. It cost my company over $250,000 just to clear that stuff off the record.
Right. And it's one thing to clear it off the record, but anyone that knows the story, still it was out there that you were accused of attempted murder. And, you know, once it's out there, no matter what the Correct. Result was.
Correct. Oh, yeah. And in some of the states were just horrendous. Oklahoma put me all over their website.
Mm.
Right. And I'm in Arizona and I only had one client there. But, it's good to let a state know when you're doing business in their state.
Right.
And they put me all over their website like I'm some kind of crazed murderer and stuff.
So did it affect your clientele? Did a lot of people walk?
Fortunately not. They knew me. We did not lose one client. One that did leave for a very brief amount of time found out. They go, well, they don't do what you all do, Barry. So we're coming back.
Okay. So let me ask a question. Ultimately, how many days did you spend in jail?
5 days in jail.
Okay. And then after that, it was just waiting to see what was going to happen. But you could have gone away for
6 months of legal maneuvering.
Right. And had you been found guilty? I mean, you're looking at 20 plus years. What were you looking
at? Oh, yeah. 20 to 25 years in prison.
Right. Right. So I'm assuming there was a huge amount of fear, not just with you, with your company, with your wife, with your friends. Oh, yeah. And absolutely what that must have put you guys through.
Oh, it was horrible. It was horrible. It was an absolute nightmare. The thing that got me through it was, number one, my faith in God. Number two was the support of my family, friends, and my clients. And number three was the Ranger training that taught me the mental discipline and fortitude that I received in the military.
Right.
I wouldn't have made it if I hadn't been through that.
Right. So you wrote a book. It's called Stand Your Ground. First of all, writing it, was it cathartic? Was it how did it make you feel?
At times saddened, and at other times infuriated.
Yeah.
I would just walk around and record myself as I was so I could try to get the feeling into the book.
Yeah, I totally understand that. How long did it take you to write it?
2 years.
2 years. So in writing it and also in what you've been, what do you think most people misunderstand about self-defense cases?
What do I think? Oh, that's a tough question. What did I think they misunderstand? It's not black and white when it comes to the legal system.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Make sure that you know the laws. My wife and I are licensed to carry at that time in 41 states. We're still licensed to carry in 41 states. We know the laws. We actually have an app on our phone that we pay to keep updated. So when we cross into another border of another state, we're looking at the laws for that state. It's so important to know the laws in that state because some of them are so different. I personally think there needs to be just like you get a driver's license, I think there should be a reciprocity license for all states for us to carry. Go through some federal training and allow us to be able to do that. Because, you don't know what's going to happen when, Rachel, and you have to be prepared for the unexpected. It's not the job of the police to protect you. Yes, they put that on the side of their car, but it's been held up in Supreme Court cases that it's not their job to jump in front of a bullet for you.
Right.
All right. Their job is to investigate crime. and to arrest people for crime.
Yeah.
But that's always after the fact. And it's not because they're bad people. They're good people. They're trying to do their job to the best of their ability. And a lot of them will jump in front of that bullet.
Right.
But the reality is you're responsible for your family.
Right. I'm actually curious because I have a guest coming up in the next couple of weeks. Did you ever follow the Kyle Rittenhouse story?
Very much so. Yes.
And so Kyle's going to come on, and a lot of people don't know if he's a criminal or if he was, you know, a victim. And listen, the situation was much different. He went out one night itching for a fight, kind of, and it ended up terribly for not only him, but obviously the people that died. And he ultimately was, you know, found not guilty. What did you think of his situation?
Well, I think he was trying to do the right thing, mm-hmm. being a young 17-year-old at the time. And help his community. I don't think he was necessarily looking for trouble, but you know, if you go back in our history, you know, it's only been in the last 50 to 75 years that we've put all these age requirements on things. Mm-hmm. You know, 21 to smoke, 18, 21 to get alcohol. Back when our grandparents were growing up, they had licenses when they were 12 years old.
Yeah.
They were on their own having kids by the time they were 13 or 14. He was trying to do the manly thing and step up for his community. And he got caught in a bad situation. He put himself in a bad situation. But at the same time, you know, listening to some of the police and the officers that were there, they appreciated him being there because the thing was out of control. Yeah. We were having rioters, people burning things. It's been absurd. What a lot of the political community over the past several years has allowed to happen throughout the country and justify it. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're just upset. They're tearing things down. No, they're looting stores and burning cars.
Yeah. Another thing that I wanted to ask you is about, I mean, listen, it's such a touchy thing to talk about gun laws, right? There are so many people that believe in carrying guns. There are so many people that want it completely taken away. As someone who obviously has a license to carry a gun, you and your wife. What are your thoughts? Because obviously you listen to the news and see how out of hand it gets when all of a sudden you see school shootings and all these crazy things that happens. What is your opinion on what's going on with these people and if they should be allowed to get guns this easily?
I don't think it's that easy.
Mm-hmm.
Usually these people that get guns, they're getting them from their parents,
right?
Stuff like that. They're not securing them. That's just lack of supervision.
Okay.
Right?
You're right, because that is correct. But, you know, as an outsider, listen, I'm not someone that carries a gun. I don't really know anything about it. I got my master's in forensic investigation. We had to learn how to shoot. I was able to get a license to carry in the state of California if I wanted to because of what I, you know, the degree that I had. Mm-hmm. But I was like, this is going to turn out terribly because I don't want to have a gun even near me. God forbid something happened and someone shoots me with my own gun, right? So, but as a total outsider, it seems like you hear from the media that it's easy enough to walk into a Walmart, Walgreens, whatever it is that people are getting guns from, which I don't even know if that's true or not, but it seems like it's an easy thing. You fill something out. No one cares if you're crazy or not. Tell me, is that not true?
That's not true.
Okay.
That's not true.
So it is hard to get a gun.
You didn't used to have these problems.
Right.
It's when they started putting all these laws in place to do that. Up until when I went to high school, we carried guns. We kept them in the back of our car. They were in the back of my truck and my car. We had guns. You did not put up with this craziness. Right. And people were able to defend themselves. My teachers carried guns. Mm. They actually had elective classes where you could go in and get gun training. And wow. it was a qualified course, just like when I took driver's ed, it was in high school.
Right.
So the more we limit, the only people you're limiting, Rachel, by putting these laws in place are the law abiding citizens, because they're the only ones that are going to put an app on their phone to check out the laws for that state.
I see.
The crooks aren't going to do that. The crazy people don't care.
Right. Right. You're right. I mean, I didn't think of it that way. All right. So let's go back to your book for a second. What do you hope that readers take away from your story?
That there needs to start being action. All the proceeds from the book are going to a foundation my wife and my legal team started called Defense Resources Foundation. And you can go to that website. It's a .org, defenseresourcesfoundation.org. All right. And start looking at the laws within their state. Let's get them changed. Let's stop prosecutors. If you can't get them from being elected, then figure out some other ways to hold them accountable, because the bars, that's really the only way you can hold a prosecutor accountable, because of the fact that of the 1983 Supreme Court ruling, they have absolute immunity. Most people don't know that. You can't sue a prosecutor. You can sue the county or city they live in, but you can't sue the prosecutor.
I see.
All right. And that's a horrible thing. So they can't be held accountable. When you send it to the bar, well, it's a bunch of lawyers trying to hold another lawyer's accountable.
Right.
It doesn't work. So start getting involved, learn from it. And then the proceeds from the book are going to help change the laws in those states and help people like Kyle Rittenhouse, like Daniel Penny, that are wrongfully indicted, that should have never been indicted in the first place, to have the resources available to defend themselves. Because one of the things I'll tell you is this cost me a lot of money.
Yeah.
And if I did not have the company I had, I would have, there's no telling how long this would have taken.
Right. I mean, do you think if you didn't have the resources that you could have ended up in jail?
Oh, yes. No doubt in my mind.
Prison. Yeah.
No doubt in my mind. I think that's why so many people take a lesser charge.
Right.
Because they don't have the resources. And the public defenders, their books are so full because most people don't have the resources to hire a private attorney. They can't keep up with their own workload.
Right. Right. I get it. You were talking about narrative earlier, and that the police changed the narrative. You know, everyone against you changed the narrative. Do you feel you've been able to reclaim your own narrative, or do you think you're still and always will be in the process of it?
No, I reclaimed it once the record was sealed in 2021. By the Superior Court of Arizona. They sealed the record, so it's been stripped from the FBI and everybody else. And now I'm able to tell the story, put everything out there, reclaim the narrative, and let's start waking America up to what's going on in the United States. And this is not a Republican, Democrat, red, blue thing. This is an American issue. We need to be able to defend our families, our livelihoods, our property, ourselves. And we need the courts to be in line with what the Constitution reads and stop letting people interpret it the way they want to.
Right. What does life look like for you today?
If it got much better, I'd do cartwheels. You find out you have three kids instead of two and four grandkids instead of two. That's a beautiful thing right there alone.
Right. I agree.
And then a company that's growing exponentially. We broke out on our own completely in 2019. We've grown 500% in that time period. I'm living the American dream, and I'm able to help out in other areas. My wife and I were very active in our church, as well as I'm the president of the National Ranger Memorial Foundation for Army Rangers. And so it's a beautiful thing.
Right.
Life is good.
It sounds very good.
But go to the website, get the book, standyourgroundbook.com. And remember, all the proceeds are going to defenseresourcesfoundation.org. And if you want to donate, just go there. You can do monthly or whatever.
Amazing. Last question for you. If somebody listening finds themselves facing a legal nightmare or public shame, what advice would you give to them?
Be your own advocate. Take charge of your case. Don't depend on the lawyers. If you read my book, you're going to find out my lawyers made some mistakes. But because I knew the law so well, and I was the one writing the checks, they got to see things my way, and it really moved a lot faster after that.
Amazing. Barry, thank you so much. Stand Your Ground is out now. Tell people one more time where they can get your book or find out more about your foundation.
Please go to standyourgroundbook.com. You can also order it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Dorrance Publishing. And the foundation is defenseresourcesfoundation.org. If you find yourself in trouble, go there and donate for those out there that have the resources to do that. But if you find yourself in trouble, have your attorney go on there and apply for assistance.
Amazing.
We'll be there to help you.
Awesome. I'm going to support you. I'm going to go get the book today. Thank you so much, Barry. Good luck with everything. I really wish you the best. I cannot wait to hear what happens when you meet your daughter for the first time.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. God bless you. And thank you for having me on. This has been a pleasant experience.
Anytime.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.